The Fearless Podcast, in a time of deceit, telling the truth is a revolutionary act.
All right, y'all. Welcome back to the Fearless Podcast. This is episode 77. And before we get started, I just wanted to let everyone know the new website is live. And any of you that are interested in a food 401k and all those cool things, the food forest in a box and our fruit cuttings are also available. So check us out over there. We still have one whole cow available. So if you want to make a deposit, you can do it over at thetexasboys.com. We are completely demonetized. So this is the way that you can support us by supporting our affiliates down below or going on over to thetexasboys.com. And I am incredibly pumped to have back on the show the first returning guest. I want to introduce y'all to Barry James Dyke. Hey, Barry, welcome to the Fearless Podcast. How you doing today, brother?
Great to see you, TD. Great to see you, TD. And it's a beautiful day up here in New Hampshire. And how's it doing down in Texas?
It is glorious. I think it was like in the 60s this morning. And, 80, and there's a cool breeze out of the south. So it is fabulous. This is the time when everybody wants to be in Texas. You know what I mean?
I'll be there in 2 weeks. So I'm psyched. So,
awesome, man.
So it's great to see you and be of service and whatever you want to talk about is up to you.
That's always my dilemma and conundrum because there's so many different things to talk about. Once again, I want to reintroduce everyone to your research and what you've done, Pirates of Manhattan 1 and 2. I know that you've done a couple other books. You have a brand new book. Maybe we could start off with talking about the new book, Retirement Ruse.
Yeah. So here it is right here for your... This is a long story, but I have a friend in Indiana. He wanted to do a marketing thing with me, but in any event, I had been working on the Pirates 3 book for, she was probably 10 years anyhow, about private equity and stuff like that. But I finished the last book I did was 9 years ago with Guaranteed Income, and that still sells all over the place today. The reason I wrote this book is because all these scams which were going on during the pandemic, TD, okay, crypto, SPACs, which is special purpose acquisition companies, the unicorns, which are essentially a startup business valued at $1 billion or more, and the buybacks, which is, most people don't realize it, TD, but roughly 50% of all purchases in the stock market are companies buying back their own shares. So, yeah. it was a process which has been illegal, really, until 1983. And then it was a guy by the name of John Shad. He was like an old E.F. Hutton investment banker working under Gregg and whatever, and they repealed it. And so what we're seeing now, TD, more than ever, it's just a total manipulation of all the markets and on a whole scale basis. Even when people get fined, no one goes to jail.
Yeah. If you pay to play, you know, it's the old payola thing. If you pay to play, you can do whatever you want. And us normie plebs at the bottom of the pyramid, you know, we go to jail and these guys pay like a 0.5% fine, and then they pay the fine with the Fed bucks that they get. So it's a small commission is basically what they're paying. They're just paying a referral fee, basically.
Yeah, and essentially most of these fines are paid out of shareholder money, so the executives aren't even paying for it. They deduct it as a cost of going so the shareholders are eating the cost. And then the taxpayer and actually underwrites it because it's a deductible cost, and nothing happens. Now, there's a great, very topical thing, and this is, people don't believe me, Google TD Bank. I don't know, is the TD Bank, are they in Canada? I mean, are they in Texas at all?
They are not. No, they're not in Texas.
But they're a huge bank, huge
Yeah, I'm from the Philly area, and yeah, TD Bank is huge in the Northeast, like very huge.
So it's huge. So to just kind of give you kind of a the scope of this TD is that TD Bank literally was fined last February, you know, about $1.2 billion for being involved in the Sanford financial scam, which was in 2009. And this is when TD Bank and a bunch of other banks referred this guy, Alan Stanford, in the Barbados, and he ended up scamming people for like $7 billion, okay? But TD Bank was the front-running bank, and there was other banks, HSBC and so forth. $1.2 billion fine about 16 months ago. And then this week, TD Bank has agreed to pay a $3 billion fine for money laundering with the Chinese, fentanyl. You know, I mean, you know, drugs is a real problem. I mean, you're in Texas. Yeah. I mean, I don't have to tell you about all this crap coming over the border.
Yeah.
They paid a $3 billion fine in settlements, all right? No one goes to jail.
Yeah.
So, but I talk about this in this book here. I talk about it in depth because I say if you get scammed on Wall Street with the banks, which continues to happen, the first major one, TD Bank, which was involved with the Stanford financial scam, that wasn't settled till last February. So it's 14 years after people lost their money. Now, yeah. Now get this one, TD. Now, out of the $7 billion lost, they only recovered about $2.7 billion. Okay. And the lawyers got a third of it.
Yeah, exactly. And yeah, so the people lawyers that are damaged by it get nothing. They get pennies.
And nothing. So what I'm saying is that, you know, it's great having you on, guys like you out there, because what happens, even when these banks are caught with their hands in the till or whatever you want to call it, nothing really happens. I mean, you know, but I have my own advisory business, and I have all these strict money laundering stuff, whatever. They have to know everything. But I'm saying,
yeah. Yeah,
they, you know, TD Bank laundered for 10 years. They paid it three, you know, it's but anyway, so that's kind of the crazy things which are going on. But I think now more than ever, people really need to hear an honest voice about really going on, because you're not going to hear it in the mainstream media.
Yeah, and that's why I always like to talk about capital, because, you know, we throw around this word capitalism. You know, and now that we are a debt-based economy with a debt-based currency, it's systematically destroyed even the concept of capital and savings and all these different things. And it's obviously, and then everybody kind of jumps on board, and the Dave Ramseys and the Susie Ormans, you know, and you need to get this 12% annual rate of return so that you can meet your retirement goals, right? And it's just total propaganda, and everyone refuses to return to just sound money principles. And look, I mean, yeah, the government's going to do what it's going to do, and it's going to debt base, and it's going to print money and do all these things, you know, and it'll ship it to the Ukraine and Israel. You know, don't worry if we have some cataclysmic event here in North Carolina and East Tennessee. I mean, we can send them like $750 that they'll have to pay back and all that stuff. But you know, meanwhile, if we could just return individually, the beauty of solutions is the solutions are still available to us somehow by the grace of God on a personal level, and we can still implement our own sound money principles. We can save, we can capitalize, we can accumulate our own private equity so that we can leverage that and utilize it, which is one of the biggest reasons why I think 401ks are such a gigantic scam. You know, it's all predicated upon one, they're in bed with the government, so you get a tax deferment, you know, and all this stuff. And anytime the government gives you anything, you obviously have to know that it's a scam. So you get this tax deferment, and then you have to outsource your investments to these third parties, which magically gives all the money to BlackRock, State Street, and Vanguard, right? And they do all this hoaxy ETF stuff, which is, you know, and then you're paying these financial advisors a fee or a percentage. And meanwhile, you have no access to your capital, you know, and then everybody wants to poo-poo on like whole life and annuities. Oh, well, 2% and 4%. And, you know, you're never going to make it unless you're getting 8 to 12. And meanwhile, hey, Barry, maybe you could talk a little bit about this. Average rate of return versus annual rate of return, because that's a big one of these like leverage mechanisms that they do to kind of fake everybody out, move the numbers and basically finagle the numbers. And they present these charts and different things, and the real rate of return is substantially less. And then when you factor in taxes, it's even lower.
Yeah, well, so it's a lot of it, TD. It's all bit, you know, in the sense that there's two actuarial reports I've actually referred to. One is Cliffwater Associates out of Marina Del Rey, and they're in California, and then in New York City, and then Piscataqua Research, which is a friend of mine, an actuarial firm and forecasting firm. And they looked at like 147 pension plans, you know, managing roughly about 4.7 trillion assets, something like that. I can give people the exact numbers they want to know. But what they found, TD, is that actually, if you look at the rate of return is, I hate to say it, if you look at the real rates of return on retirement plans and over a long extended period of time, it's really pretty much mirrors like a 30-year treasury bill. So the whole, now there's always going to be outliers, don't get me wrong, and everyone wants to have the next Google or Facebook or what have you. But so the fact of the matter is that the institutions really don't make a lot of money. But the thing is, but Wall Street always makes money. The banks always make money, you know. And so it's really a fee driven business. And then when you get into things like private equity, it gets so non-transparent that it makes it very difficult for anyone to figure it out. But the truth of the matter is that if you look at the large pension funds, or like you're in Texas, like if you look at the Texas teachers or whatever, they don't really get much better than the 30-year treasury bill, over extended period of time.
Yeah, it's all a dog and pony show. And what happens with these large market corrections is it's just a wealth transfer. Because like you said, the institutions make their money, the government makes their money. The average investor gets their, you know, very minimal return. And, but that wealth transfers, and not only does that wealth transfer, but we are empowering the, transfer of wealth, you know, BlackRock, State Street, Vanguard, you know, they control everything, they own everything. Well, people keep blindly giving them their money for this 12% annual rate of return that never materializes. And they're actually funding those that are going to buy up all the land out from under them and around them. And, you know, that's why we all have to return to personal responsibility, education. We have to be aware, you know, one thing I think that's apparent, you know, there's these different people, and I think it's the social engineers that kind of probe and all this talk about civil war and everything. And nobody really understands what that is implying. If that were to ever occur, 90% of American society couldn't even tolerate it, let alone actually make it come to any kind of fruition, because we're kind of, you know, we eat too much Fruit Loops and all that kind of cool stuff. But but this, by educating people, making them aware, and then they can make their individual family decisions, you know. And then like we are personally involved as a family with privatizing and creating our own capital. And we want to, as a family, fund our ventures, whether my son is building a new house here next door, and we are privately funding that through our stored value that we have. And we don't have to go to a bank. We certainly don't have to get I think the 30-year mortgage rates now are like, I just asked yesterday, a 15-year fixed rate now is like almost, it's right under 8%. And that's kind of incredible, you know? But if we take our power back, right, and we take our decisions back and we warehouse our money, and then if we can scale that. So, you know, my son's going to be marrying into a family, and now you have two families. And if they are synergistically doing the same thing, you can not very quickly, but over a period of a decade, you can, that wealth and that storehouse of wealth can grow exponentially. You know, if you continue to do that, that's why compounding interest is a powerful thing. Was that Einstein that said it's the eighth wonder of the world, you know, and if people just grab that and stop listening to the noise and stop listening to the propaganda and stop outsourcing their investments and kind of passing the buck. And well, then if that investment fails, I can blame my advisor, or I can, you know, blame the institutional malfeasance, and, you know, and these guys, TD Bank, they're going to pay $3 billion and they're off the hook and they're going to keep doing what they're doing. And meanwhile, if they didn't have a large group of people allowing them to fleece them, you know, we are facilitating our own financial destruction.
Oh yeah, the irony of all this FTD is, like, a friend of mine, Gretchen Morgan, said, she works for NBC now, but she said, you know, the biggest crimes, Barry, are the ones going on in broad daylight.
Yeah,
and you know, and so when you look at the 401k system, it is a wealth transfer system. If you look at the passive index model, and I'm for indexing in a lot of respects, but there's absolutely unequivocally no accountability whatsoever with this model. Larry Fink, who runs, you know, BlackRock, he doesn't care. He's a billionaire. Okay, you know, most people don't realize that during, you know, which BlackRock lost in 2022 TD.
No,
$1.7 trillion.
Wow.
Okay, you won't see that in the headlines, you know, but there's something today about, you know, BlackRock making they're the biggest now. They're $11.5 trillion, whatever. But what they do is they've got this literally through legislative fiat. I mean, they have the Thrift Savings Plan, which is the largest 401k in the world for government workers and, you know, the military and everything. So a lot of this stuff is really it's not, you know, it's what is called rentier society, which is really these asset managers and banks that collect fees off of money, even with fiat money. And they make a lot of money on this stuff, but individual investors, not so much. So people, if you really look at people you know, who are very successful, they do it by investing in themselves and having their own businesses and so on. Now, it's not for the faint-hearted, but I think the more people become self-reliant, and now I'm more convinced than that ever, TD, okay, the more they the better off they're going to be. And because what we have is the miracle of compound interest, it turned into the nightmare of compound debt. And yeah. And that's, so we're this will be coming up in my next book, TD. You know where America stands in terms of the top 25 in retirement plans? It's all in this book, by the way.
I know it's in the bottom. I know they're in the bottom five.
Yeah, in the top 25, the U.S. is 22. Okay, I think, matter of fact, it's right here. It's in the, but I could actually, Mercer does this out of Australia. There's an actuarial firm. They compare all the world's greatest retirement plans each year. And U.S. is number 22. We're sandwiched between Hong Kong and the United Arab Emirates. You know, so Kazakhstan has a better retirement plan than us. New Zealand, Portugal. I mean, so we really don't. We have really kind of, we may have good military system, but we have crappy third world retirement system. So the problem we're going to have, TD, and this is, you know, I've been in finance long enough now to realize that there's a real retirement crisis, huge.
Yeah.
Okay, it's freaking huge. Okay, no one wants to talk about it in the media. Nobody. And I've been thrown out by all of them, all right? But the thing is we're 22 in the top 25. And the problem is it's going to be there's a research published by a guy named Robert Shapiro for the Alliance of Lifetime Income. And it's going to be like 30.2 million people retiring, turning 65 between 2025 and 2030. And two-thirds of them, TD, they've got nothing else than Social Security. Now, this is bad. This is worse than bad. But this is what's going on. So that's why I did this. But the sad thing about it is that so much of the shenanigans, TD, is going on with other people's money. It's going on with the money from Vanguard. It's going on from the money in BlackRock. It's going on from money in Fidelity. And I have it all documented. It's all documented. I'm not crazy. I mean, so I have everything backed up. And I did a lot of the research. And then Crunchbase is a service I use. They actually document it. So it's very sad when you start looking at it. But the gambling with other people's money is incredible. But if people use it, things like annuities and life insurance contracts, particularly in a state like Texas where you're at, it's a really good place to warehouse wealth.
Is there anything in your book concerning BlackRock? What was that during COVID when the Fed started basically bailing out BlackRock? When they started bailing out like the private equity firms?
Well, yeah, BlackRock is, you know, it goes back to, you know, BlackRock, believe it or not, and Blackstone, which is, biggest private equity firm in the world, they were spun out of Lehman Brothers. It was back in 2005, 2006. And we all know what happened to Lehman Brothers. They're all broke, you know, they were a large it was the largest corporate bankruptcy of all time. But yeah, you know, it's an inside job. You know, BlackRock, they facilitated all the money, facilitated the bailout of J.P. Morgan and Bear Stearns and all that stuff. So it's really inside job. The only reason why they really are big is the reason why they're so big is because they acquired Barclays indexing business. And see, Barclays out of the UK was the biggest indexer, but during the financial crisis, Barclays was in trouble. So BlackRock, with the taxpayer, you and their help, was able to buy their indexing business and hence become a giant in that business. Now, since then, they've got into all kinds of private equity and so forth. But so a lot of it is, and they're trying to get the higher fee business. So, but their base of their index business, which is, then they have a monopoly, if you will, on the thrift plan. That's what really kind of drives all this stuff. And then they use a lot of this stuff like the ESG stuff, the environmental, social, and governance, which is a lot of it's just a scam. You know, I think, and I'll say that to anyone. I mean, hey, no one wants to have like these natural disasters, which we just had in North Carolina and Florida, you know, in the past couple of days. It's been horrific. And they talk about climate change. There's no doubt that's a problem. I'm not going to disagree with that. But the bigger issue, TD, is the economic inequality. And to understand that, you have to understand how our country saves. And when you understand how a country saves, it's very, very corrupt.
Yeah, so, and they want the caste system. The reason they want all of those people to retire with nothing is so their only resource will be the government. And hey, look, you know, we need more money, so you're going to have to tax the working class more so that you can double my Social Security because of hyperinflation. You know, I have to eat cat food every day. And, you know, it's a very, very long play. It's a very huge wealth transfer, and it allows all of the money to trickle to the top 1%ers. But the point I always like to make in all of that is if you are personally implementing sound financial principles and you are debt free and you are developing, you know, that was a huge takeaway. I hope that everybody heard what Barry was saying about investing in yourself and being entrepreneurial, right? And the greatest investment you can make is in business ideas, right? And networking and all these things, because this is what's going to be needed and required in order for us to be able to compete with inflation, taxation, and all these other things. And then if you're taking advantage of vehicles like Whole Life, that if you use it properly, is a complete tax shelter. And if you perform it properly, you know, you can avoid the taxes, and, you know, which when you avoid those taxes, you're avoiding this gigantic expense that will only ever increase. It can only ever go up, because once there's nothing in the cookie jar. So if there's nothing there, it's an absolute mathematical fact that taxes will go up. And if you can shelter yourself from that exposure, I mean, in a real way, we can't even calculate that, because we have no idea 10 years from now what the tax rate's going to be. And I mean, that's the one big important thing that you talk about a lot with annuities and Whole Life, is just everybody wants to talk about the 12% rate of return and all the sexy sizzle stuff and the Bitcoin, but nobody ever wants to talk about accessing your dollars during financial uncertainty, right? When all of these things that you can't put on the bar graph and the mountain chart, all these different things called real life, when you know, whether it's a catastrophic event, whether it's maybe a health issue, you know, cancer, all these different things, when you're going to need access to your money, and, you know, your 401k provider is just like, well, you can take a hardship withdrawal now, but you have to fill out an application and all these different things. Whereas if you would take personal control of your finances and personal control of your investments and your money, you would have contractual access to that, because these kind of things are going to happen.
They happen all the time. They happen all the time, TD. And, you know, I always tell people, I keep it this simple. I said, a new toaster from Walmart has more guarantees than a 401k. You know, I have to keep it that simple. You know, and if you understand arbitration agreements, or anyone ever reads it, what they give you in the small print, they take it away. Anything they say in the big print, they take away in the small print. So if you understand a 401k and you understand your the arbitration, you have really nothing. There's nothing can happen. Nothing, no recourse you can have if you lose money. And then make it even more complicated, TD. Roughly almost $5 trillion in 401ks now. More than half of that is what is called collective investment trusts. Have you heard of those? No, if a collective investment trust, essentially, they're governed by either the banking regulator of the state or the insurance department. So the whole thing, there's no even SEC oversight over a collective investment trust. And this is more than half the money is today. And couldn't make this stuff up. But they're using collective investment trusts so they can stick other stuff into them, like hedge funds and private equity. And if people don't believe me, Google the collective investment trust of Intel is a classic court case. And so they're starting to really put in kind of these sketchy stuff into them. And
way back in 2008, you know, I was a junior partner at a financial planning firm. And so I would do all of the portfolio prep for meetings. Yeah. And we used Morningstar Principia Pro. And so we do all the stock overlap. And so the software would make these pie charts. And what I noticed back then is I would see these major fund families, like American, like, so you had American Large Cap Fund, right? And you would look at it would show you the top 10 holdings. And this is a 5-star rated fund and all this stuff. And one of the top 10 holdings in American Large Cap Fund is a 1-star American Small Cap Fund. I'm like, how is that allowed? I mean, that's outside the asset, outside all of the theories that go behind all of this asset allocation stuff. And I was seeing that kind of stuff happening way back then. And I was like, man, this whole thing's a Ponzi scheme. Like, and it's completely, there's no type of oversight of any of it to protect anyone. These financial institutions are just allowed to do whatever they do. And if it does get enough attention, it's just a $3 billion fine is all that comes of it. And they continue to do the same thing over and over again.
Yeah. So that's the whole thing. You know, and I love this country. Don't get me wrong. I mean, I've been fortunate. I've traveled a good part of the world. I've been, I don't know, 40 countries, 50 countries, but so I'm very grateful. And I love living here. But the thing is that if you want to be financially happy, you got to be really, you have to be really self-reliant. And the thing is, because otherwise you're really essentially working for the asset management industrial complex. Remember Dwight D. Eisenhower called it the military industrial complex. Well, we're living for the asset management industrial complex at this point. And the section of the economy, which is fire, which is finance and insurance and real estate, is just a huge, huge component of the economy now. And a lot of it doesn't really produce anything other than fees for themselves. So people really need to be more self-reliant, and they need to get back to the basics. You know, it's kind of like organic food, if you will, or, you know, just really good, wholesome stuff. And if you do that over an extended period of time, you'll eventually you'll have a much better financial life.
Yeah, even if it's only a 30%, if you're able to develop an income, right, a fixed income that composes, say, 30% of your actual needed income in retirement, I mean, that is so powerful. And it gives you, and then especially if you have access to leverage those dollars, if you have access to those dollars, in addition to that, to do entrepreneurial things or to do real estate development. And then when you turn that over, or to do private lending, when you turn that over and get a rate of return on that, and then you can basically push it back into your monetary system, that can grow exponentially, and that can make that compound interest you're getting larger, because now you're compounding a larger pool of money. And this is what capitalism, true, pure capitalism and capital is all about, is taking that small, fixed, guaranteed rate of return and then utilizing it and accessing that pool to create the currency, right? That's the whole concept of currency. It's the flow of money. And what's one way? Well, you can accelerate the speed, and by accelerating the speed and accelerating the turnover, you can, if you do it properly, you can compound that small compound interest. You create a larger pool of dollars to compound, and you're exponentially increasing that small rate of return just by currency and by cash flow and by turnover.
Yeah, and there's no question about it. But then I kind of get been known. How I get known, I guess, I don't know if you knew me, but I was the guy who discovered that all these major banks and financial institutions are actually doing these, buying these products for themselves. Now the irony of this thing is TD, and this will become, I don't really get into it in this much in this book, because I want to really explain the problem. I'll get into the next book, which I'm finishing up right now. Now everyone thinks, like Ken Fisher, everyone says annuities are bad. Okay. You know what IBM just did last September, TD?
They bought a gigantic annuity for their pension fund?
Well, they bought a gigantic one in 2022. They bought 16 billion in annuities to finance the pension fund. They bought another $6 billion annuity a month or two ago. So they essentially transferred all their risk to an insurance company for their pension plans. It's all true. And also, as of January 1st of this year, they terminated their 401k. Now, people can still contribute to the 401k. They can still do that, do a tax deferral. But instead of putting the match towards their 401k now, to putting into a cash balance plan. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of like Back to the Future. So actually, they're reigniting, if you will, a traditional defined benefit pension plan.
Yeah.
Because the 401k doesn't work.
Yeah.
And you know, and the thing is that and all the researchers I've been doing, everyone's saying, well, we have a retirement crisis, we need to use annuities. Everyone's saying it now, but I was saying it 10 years ago, 15 years ago. But so it's coming true now. And then with another thing, which I'm actually would come in the next book, is that there's a kind of a the Church of England, which I get a kick out of this one. So we know IBM, essentially with 280,000 employees, went to a cash balance plan with guarantee. In the Church of England, their workforce defined benefit pension plan, as of today, actually, they essentially transferred all their all the pension liabilities for the workforce, not for the ministers because they have another pension plan, but they transferred all their pension benefits to an insurance company, actually two insurance companies. Over a period of time. So this is what the Church of England is doing, and I'll testify in court and any of this stuff. And but again, you're not going to hear this in the mainstream media. You know, the irony of the whole thing is that the New York Times TD, who you know, I've known some of the top writers there. You know what the New York Times did in 2016?
No, no.
They bought two annuities to finance their pension plan. Yeah. Wow. Mass Mutual. Yep.
You know, what's interesting is, you know, I'm that generation. It was like, you go to school, right? Go to your government Prussian school so you can get a good education, so you can get a good job. Cause you know what a good job is? A good job is to work at IBM with a defined benefits package. Right. And so, and then what happens? So I go to college and all that stuff. And then in the middle of all that, like while I'm in college, they go from defined benefit to defined contribution. And it's like, hey, wait a minute. I was told to go to school to get a good education so I can get a good job. And now it's so crazy. It's gone full circle. Now they're going back to defined benefit. Why? Because they know that a defined contribution is going to implode and they're going to look very stupid unless they go back to a defined benefit. And that's basically what you and I are talking about. It's all about defined benefit, contractual certainty, and you can eliminate market risk and you can eliminate a lot of this chicanery just by contractual obligations. And I point, as an American, right? You say it's a great country. I'm absolutely blessed to be here. I'm thankful. Things would be very different if I was somewhere else. But one of the greatest contracts is the Constitution. And if you can look at that contract, right, and see what that contract has afforded us. And obviously it's under attack, and we can argue if it even exists anymore since the Civil War and all those things. But contracts are very powerful things, and defined a benefit is that contractual obligation. And meanwhile, it doesn't have all this sexy, you know, high rates of returns. It doesn't have these huge ups and these gigantic downs, but in the end, your money's there.
Exactly. Because it's a contract, and which is kind of the whole cornerstone of the American economy and any free market economy is a contract. You know, a legal binding contract between two or more parties. And that's the beauty of it. But if people realize that, you know, like a 401k, there is no, it's like whatever, what you see is what you get. And if you get it. And so the thing is that people need to, and I think you understand this, TD, is that if you're part of the government, in terms of retirement, you know, if you're a government employee, you're going to be all set. And if you're really rich, you're fine. But for everyone else, which is probably more than 80% of us, we gotta pay attention.
Yeah,
because it's not good. I mean, it's, you know, and it's not going to get better. And I think the Congressional Budget Office, they just released, I don't know if you saw those numbers they released this week. I think we came in, and I could give you the exact figures. This will be coming out in the book, but We had roughly, I think, $4.92 trillion in revenues in 2024 TD, and we're going to have like, but we spent like $6.8 trillion. So to make a long story short, we had a deficit of $1.83 trillion. So we spent more than that when we come in. Now get this, 17% of all government revenue is going just to interest. If that isn't one way street. So my point is that people need to be aware of this because the government is out of control.
If you look at the way that the Fed is actually doing their quantitative easing, that 17% is largely fictitious, because if you look at the way the Fed is doing their buybacks and different things, it's actually exponentially larger than that, right?
Yeah, but you want to know the irony of the whole thing? This is becoming in the guaranteed income book, which I'm kind of jumping ahead, which I'm finishing up now. But what the nation's central bank has for its own retirement plan, TD?
What's that?
They got three defined benefit plans. They got three of them.
Yeah.
And the Cadillacs. And so for everyone else, get like a Yugo, but they have like an 8-cylinder Mercedes, you know? Eight cylinder bi turbo Mercedes for themselves. So yeah, I've documented it, I got the audit for 24,000 employees. They have essentially a Cadillac defined benefit pension plan. So the central bank takes care of itself. Other people underneath it, not so much. And so I think what you're doing is really, really important, because people just don't know what's really going on. And, now, thank God you're in Texas, but now, did you say you grew up in Philadelphia, that area?
Yep. Yeah, that's where I grew up there in the Northeast. And we left 10 years ago, so I got out as soon as I could. We just saw the region, and that de Blasio guy got in there in New York City. And I was like, man, he could suck down the whole quadrant with with the social communist pinko stuff. So we got out of Dodge.
Yeah, so but the thing is that it's really kind of irony, the whole thing is that I have most of my people get inquiries from people from the South or out West or everywhere in the Northeast, and so everyone drinks the Kool-Aid on this stuff, and people blame everything climate change and everything, and I'll be the first one, I don't like any pollution, I don't want any see any warming, global warming. No one wants to see that stuff. But the fact of the matter is economic inequality, and this is my opinion, is the greatest problem. And to understand what's going on with the monetary system, you'll never understand it. And,
you talk to your average 401k investor and, you start talking about compounding interest and whole life and these other contractual vehicles, and that when they mention it to their coworker, or they mention it to their boss, my boss is on the surface, he looks very financially successful. And that's something that I learned in the financial planning industry, is that all of those people are broke at a higher level, we had some very large clients that were so leveraged and debt ridden out. It was incredible. They'll go to their boss and say, hey, what have you ever heard of this? What do you think about? Oh, that's crazy. That's smoke and mirrors, when it's actually all written in black and white. It's the opposite of that. It is absolutely certain, it's guaranteed, it's very specific. And all the, the loan provisions and all these different things that are there in black and white, it's the most non smoke and mirrors versus, well, I can show you a chart on the rate of return at this asset allocation within our 401k plan. And, that will destroy any type of fixed investment that you could possibly, but meanwhile, life happens and, death happens and medical costs happen and all these different things that aren't on the chart. and people are left scratching their head and they're like, how do, a college professor, it was an investing class, and she said 98% of all investments fail. And I said, wait a minute, how does that work? Like, well, if that's true, you know, your average investor is not going to get the performance they want. And, you know, that was an interesting discussion in class, because I'm like, well, if that's true, then what are we doing here? You know what I mean? It's
like, well, yeah, it's the asset management industrial complex. Actually, I have the research in the next book. This is a guy named Henrik Bessenbinder, University of Arizona. And he's done some wonderful research, and he's actually tracked stocks from like 1926 to like 2019 and then 21. And the whole thing is that, you know, majority of the stocks don't even return their, you know, they don't make any money. It's now, there's always going to be outliers. Don't get me wrong. I mean, we know that. Okay. But it's very, very difficult to make money in that space. But this is rammed down Americans' throats. It's like cryptos. Some people think, you know, what do you think about cryptos? Well, I'm not totally not against them in concept, but I do object to them being rammed down people's throats. And that's why I wrote this book, TD, because of the scams, like TD, FTX and Alameda.
Yeah.
You can't believe it. 1.8 billion with a B was put into venture capital was put into FTX. So this guy, Sam Bankman-Fried. Now you have these people like Sequoia, you know, BlackRock was in it, and Thoma Bravo, and all these theoretically very sophisticated people. I don't even think they've read this guy's balance sheet. And make a long story short, they put 1.8 billion of, you know, other people's money, which is, you know, venture capital primarily, which is they get it from somewhere else, some pension fund, but like 9 billion of other people's money, retail savers money. There's something in the paper this week about the venture capital investors are going to be able to recapture like 230 million, which is maybe 20% of what they put in. So, but we don't even know about the retail investors yet. So, the point is that, so that's why I had to write about it. So it was a huge scam. I mean, 75% of the population, TD, this is not me. This is Pew Research out of, that's up by your old neighborhood, out of the Pew Family Trust, and which is really, they have really great, they did a survey. 75% of people do not understand cryptos and don't trust them, but they're pushed through anyway. In January 24th of this year, which benefited really BlackRock, Fidelity, and so forth. And so the thing is that you really need to think for yourself, but also, you know, don't take my word for it. I mean, if you don't, they question people, then research yourself. I have a gift. I understand some of this stuff, and I just hate people getting bullied by it.
What another very interesting twist to that whole Sam Bankman-Fried crypto debacle was that Silicon Valley Bank, Peter Thiel, right? He had 18 billion or so. Peter Thiel had 18 billion. Peter Thiel single-handedly collapsed that bank, right? And he just out of the blue pulls his money out and collapses the bank. And here all of the everyday webs that had their money there, you know, it collapses. He magically avoids the calamity by transferring his 18 billion overnight, which the only way you can even do that is with all of these shady interbanking vehicles that none of us have access to. And in a very real way, that singular event could have collapsed FTX all by itself, even if it was viable and real and there wasn't any kind of shenanigans going on.
Yeah, because that's the truth. Well, Silvergate Bank, which is the bank out of La Jolla, California, they were the main bank for Bankman-Fried. They went bankrupt, receivership, if you will. But the Silicon Valley Bank was the biggest incredible scenario scam. They went, and actually the FDIC admitted it. That guy, Martin Grunberg, who's the chairman of the FDIC, the FTC lost $20 billion with a B on the collapse of Silicon Valley alone. And the whole 250,000 thing limit was built, thrown out the window. Sequoia Capital, again, they had over $1 billion. They were protected. They were made whole. But the biggest one was Circle Internet Financial out of Boston, which is a privately held venture capitalist backed crypto company. They got billed. They had $3 billion in there. So the whole, but the irony of the whole thing, again, who are the major shareholders of Silicon Valley Bank and Silvergate? Oh, you know, State Street, Vanguard, you know, BlackRock. And so this is what you see happening. And the tragic thing is a lot of these bankers, prior to them going under, they all cashed out. The FDIC leaked that there was like over a couple dozen people making over $10 million a year at Silicon Valley Bank, and another one person made like as much as $35 million. And there's no, I haven't heard of any clawbacks of any of this stuff. So that's the whole thing. And so but most of us are not going to be in that position, but this is what people need to be more self-reliant.
Right. And that goes back to your previous point, right? Investing in yourself. If, you know, the reason these big dogs invest in this kind of stuff is because they never lose. And if you invest in yourself, and you invest in your own enterprise, and whether it's the next generation, if you're doing it on a legacy type level where you're training your children to do the same thing, and then you're investing in them, like you will not lose. And a lot of that rate of return won't even be monetary, but you can't lose. If you invest on yourself and you're using sound biblical principles, you're not going to lose. You're not going to be transferring your dollars to the Vanguards and the Black Rocks so that they can loan it out by a factor of a million or whatever. And because they're going to invest in this stuff, they're going to lose the people's money. They're going to be made whole. And the people and us taxpayers are left holding the bag. So we do have to take our power back. We have to take our dollars back. We have to educate ourselves. And that's what kind of goofs me out about crypto is I don't understand it. And it is completely ephemeral. It's on some supposed blockchain. It's totally electronic. And those switches can be turned on and off. And whether or not if it's even, it could be a gigantic Fed psyop with the whole Satoshi thing. I don't even know, but I wouldn't want to find out. Like, I always wondered if that was like a CIA. That's another huge thing, you know, that we were talking about is like the investment industrial complex. And a huge part of that is a lot of these startups are CIA paper cutout fronts. You know what I mean? And then you got the plunge protection team. You got all of this alchemy going on in on Wall Street, and when you have deep state involved, I mean, how do you overthrow a government? Well, you can collapse the economy. I mean, look at Zimbabwe, look at all these different countries, you know. And isn't that interesting? What happens if your deep state, these unelected bureaucrats that have existed, you know, factually, we can definitely say since JFK, and these guys are pulling the strings, and everybody just gives them their money, you know? Well, yeah. Give me that 12%.
Yeah. They, I don't know. Yeah. But Ramsey says that. And the thing is that he can, but they get around what it's called. This is, I don't know if there's a media exemption for the media. If they say something, it's general in content. It's actually a loophole you can drive an 18-wheeler through. So they get away with a lot of the stuff in the media. And I think one of the things which I'll bring up in the next book is that I didn't even realize this until a couple of years ago, TD. Did you know who owned one of the biggest subprime lenders when we had the subprime crisis in 2008?
Let's see, Citigroup, AIG.
It's a big media company.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah. It was actually, this is when GE owned NBC. You know, actually referred to me, and they said, you're effing, you know, crazy, you know, stuff like that. And I had a pretty good referral into them. And but yeah, it's all true that during 2007, when they owned a WMC Warehouse and Mortgage Corporation, which actually imploded, they lost $1 billion on it. This will be coming out in the next book. Yeah, it's horrific. And because 6 million people, TD. 6 million people lost their homes.
Mm. Yeah.
And you can't forget that. And the irony of the whole thing, the media is kind of, the media and the government kind of driving the getaway car for these guys, you know?
What do you, okay, so 2008 housing bubble, housing crisis, we're staring at. I was just on Twitter and a friend of mine who's a pastor was saying, is in Kentucky, and he's saying, I'm talking to all these bankers, you know, and there's a housing shortage, a housing crisis. Housing prices can never go down because there's just not enough, and they'll only ever go up, and there's this shortage. And I responded back to him. I was like, you are saying the exact same supposed facts that were stated in 2008, right before everything imploded. Right. Where do you see this housing market, this modern day bubble, which is exponentially larger than the 08 bubble? Do you have any opinion on how you see that fleshing out at all? Not that we could project, but
only God knows. As for the man upstairs, the most important thing in my life. But there's definitely, like, I live in the Seacoast, New Hampshire. It's a beautiful area. Just come up here sometime. I don't know if you've been up here, but the median price of a home up here is $905,000. I mean, and we're not talking a great home here, you know. So it's out of control. And this is because of the massive inflation, TD, because, you know, the money printing and stuff like that. It's unsustainable.
Yeah.
I mean, and the thing is that it's not going to end well. People are going to figure this out. Even my own children, I mean, they're doing, you know, pretty well, but it's very, very difficult. You know, you can buy a car or something, but a home, freestanding home around here, very, very expensive. Now, I live in a beautiful area. It's ridiculous, but because I'm near the ocean, but you'd be anywhere.
Yeah.
And look what in Florida now. I go to Florida every winter, and I don't know what's going to happen. I mean, they were Florida. I mean, who would you buy a home in Florida now?
No.
I don't think so. I mean, with all the, you know, this, you know, Helene and then Milton. Okay.
And we moved to this is the one of the massive reasons why we moved to Texas. You know, we looked around us and we're just like, how are our children, you know, the median home price when we moved 10 years ago was like in the $300,000 or $400,000 range, and you're just trying to crunch the math, right? And well, if you put 20% down, so you got $100,000, and then like now it's going to take them how long to accumulate $100,000? Okay, they'll be 50, and they're going to buy, and by the time they're 50, this $300,000 home is going to cost $1 million, right? And you're like, this is unobtainable. And that was one of the major factors. And what's so fascinating is we crunched a lot of numbers, and I was making really good money when we moved, and we moved 2,000 miles, and we crunched all of our numbers, and we said, you know, we could exist because we had three kids at the time. We could exist on $30,000+ a year because the cost of living. And then 9 years ago, we bought a fixer upper for $88,000. You know, and now in Texas, that $88,000 fixer upper is real close to probably $450,000. And, you know, and okay, so it's half of where you are, but it's still so unsustainable. It's like, so one of two things are happening. Everything will implode and crash, or as it does, you know, this is how that are going to try to do this central bank digital currency thing, in my opinion. And I don't even know if this central bank digital currency thing is even, I don't even think they have the technology to do it. Not yet. They might be able to do it in the future, but that's the only thing that I can see is this thing doesn't like implode and mushroom on itself. It's going to be by doing some kind of cyber switch out, and they're going to switch out the fiat dollar for some blockchain digital cryptocurrency, basically.
Yeah. So there's nothing we can do. I mean, we can educate and we can vote, obviously, for the and do what we possibly can. But, you know, you have to really take personal responsibility, I guess, for your own life, because I think that's a real major problem today. You know, but I think if you don't, I mean, because the government's broke. This is a, you know, Google and the government spent, you know, had a deficit of $1.83 trillion this year. I mean, you know, 17% of the money, the government revenue, it goes just to interest. This goes to VIG, you know?
Yeah. And then, you know, if you have these areas of devastation like North Carolina and Tennessee, there's going to be consequences to this. You can't, as a government, steal everybody's money and send it to the Ukraine and Israel and then be like, no, yeah, but we can't help you. Sorry, we spent everything, right? Oh, we'll send you $750, but we're going to send $1 billion to Lebanon, right? And like, you're not going to be able to continue to get away with that. Whether the consequences of that are some type of balkanization. Look at Florida right now. Okay. You look at the Florida response to the hurricane, and they had their act together. They had stuff in place. Yeah, bad stuff still happened and people died and everything, but the recovery, it is such a diametrically opposite position. If you compare Helene to Milton, it's like incredible. And like, people are going to be looking around and being like, yeah, this doesn't work like this, you know, and people are going to get tired of it. I'll tell you that much.
Yeah. So that said, is that, you know, so a lot of those things, I know my parents, don't spend what you don't have, you know, to impress people you don't like, you know, it's just, and that's the new slavery. Okay. Now the thing is, if you're a Wall Street financier and you're running a $1 billion private equity fund, and you can screw someone like, you're in Texas, you can screw the Texas teachers or whatever. Okay. Cause it's really, you know, it's not their money, but if you're a regular person, you get a lot of problems. And so I think really self-reliance TD is really going to be really the thing for people in the future, you know, and with, you know, with good discipline, good habits. A lot of the stuff which our parents taught, my parents taught me anyhow, it really invaluable now. And because the, you know, it's sad. What's one of the biggest money makers for banks is TD?
What's that, man?
Credit cards.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, credit cards. I mean, so I think just this week, JP Morgan reported record earnings, like $12.97 billion or something like this quarter, or whatever. But like 20-30% of it's from credit cards.
Yeah.
And the average credit card is like 23-24%.
Wow.
And some of these credit cards, like Synchrony, which is the old GE Capital,
yep. Mm-hmm.
And they're as high as 34%. I mean, when I was a kid, they called loan shark.
Yeah, that's illegal. Yeah.
So they're creating money out of thin air, and then when you can't pay the money they create out of thin air, they can repossess all your assets. Now, luckily, you're in a good state like Texas, where there's some asset protection. But a lot of states, like I'm in New Hampshire, I mean, you know, you get sued to go bankrupt. You're lucky if you get a box of tools.
You know? I can give you a powerful illustration of taking responsibility and self-reliance. So we just talked about the average home price here for 2,400 square feet is about $350,000, $450,000. So my son, so we had this concept of legacy, building a living legacy, doing it while we're alive, right? And staying debt free and all these different things. So my son is in the process of building a 2,400 square foot home. And now this is family land. So that takes a large burden of the initial costs off. We are privately funding this loan. I'm going to privately fund a loan to my son at 5%. And he's going to build his house for probably $100,000. And, you know, what's the monthly payment on that? $600. Can you think he can afford that? I think he can afford that. And see, this is the illustration of even in a hyperinflationary environment with these gigantic costs and all these different things, if we take personal responsibility, you start immediately, you start doing what you can, where you are with what you have, and you start immediately, 10 years from now, you will be able to, or 5 years from now, or depending on however fast you do it, you'll be able to do these exact same things. And it's all predicated upon self-reliance, personal responsibility, taking control of your finances, and building your own capital resource so that you can fund these projects and you're cutting out the bank. You know, there's not a bank involved. Now you've replaced the bank. You are your own bank and you can do these very powerful things. So when he gets done doing that, if he wanted to, and I'm not saying that he would want to, you know, then he would have a $350,000 or $450,000 asset. And if he wanted to leverage that, take out a home equity or whatever, now from his initial $100,000 investment, maybe let's say rates tank for some reason or whatever, right? And mortgage rates go back to 3%. He could take $300,000 out of that house at 3%, and he just turned his $100,000 into $300,000.
Yeah, and it's the magic of leverage. But and this is what the banks and all these Wall Street people do all the time. It's all based upon debt. But what you're suggesting, and I highly recommend, is that you do kind of the same thing which the banks are doing for your own financial life. And also a friend of mine, Doug Jones, out of Georgia, he's a good friend of mine, and I kind of stole this from. And if you want to create a retirement plan or a good balance sheet, you almost have to do the exact opposite of what they recommend.
Yeah,
it's actually true. So I mean, you really want to save first, and the whole thing is that putting money in a 401k is not saving. It's gambling. You know, yeah. I'm not against it. Okay, for your listeners. Okay, if you have a lot of cash flow, but you know, putting money to a 401k with, you know, having 10-15,000 in credit card is crazy, you know, right. but people are brainwashing this stuff.
Yeah. And we had a market correction in 2000, right? We had a dot-com bubble that popped 2000. We had a market correction in 2008. Okay. So that was an 8-year span with two corrections. Now, wait a minute. It's 2024. Nobody thinks the market's going to correct. Like we're on this bull run.
Well, yeah, you know, the thing is, and I bring this up in the next book, is that I don't know, TD, if you're familiar with the crash that happened in Japan. See?
A little bit.
Okay, so this is, it's Mark Twain said, history may not repeat itself, but it sure rhymes. Mm-hmm. And if you want to look at how markets can really stay in the tank for 30 years, look at Japan, because Japan after World War II, they imported all these academics, a lot of them who were educated at U.S. schools and University of Chicago, whatever. And they were big into money printing, you know, like we've been doing. And so at the time, TD, the real estate below the Tokyo Imperial Palace is worth more than like the state of California. And the real estate in Japan was worth four times the entire net worth of the United States. You couldn't make this stuff up. And at the time, TD, it cost $1 million just to join a golf club in 1989. And one of the exclusive, I'm not making this up, okay? I pull all the facts on this. And the stock market, I think at one point Japan was like 30 or 40% of the entire world stock market because of all this massive inflation, because of the printing of money. All right.
Yeah.
It did not end well. It crashed the essentially the market. So the Nikkei 225, which is kind of like our S&P 500, that was up around 36,000, okay, at the time in 89. It didn't, it was down, it stayed down for 30 years.
Wow.
And it just crossed over. I think about last February. So I figured it was down for 30 years. And the thing is, that, but now the Central Bank of Japan is printing money again. But the problem is it's hurting regular Japanese people. I mean, they can't afford to buy meat. I guess it's a great place if you want to go on vacation right now because the dollar goes so far. But the yen has gone down from like 165 to the dollar to like 130 in the dollar. So there's been massive inflation for the Chinese. And what I'm saying, how are we any different?
Right. We're not.
We're not. I mean, we're not. I mean, it's just.
Yeah. And our only saving grace in all this crazy money printing is that all the central banks and all the other countries are, relatively speaking, doing the same thing. It's the only reason why there hasn't been a larger correction until now is because they're all doing this financial alchemy. And, you know, we're going to suffer. We're going to pay the tab on that.
Yeah. So that's the whole thing. So people don't believe me. Just look at Japan and. Yeah, Nikkei 25. So it took, there was such, the market was in the toilet for 30 years. But people think if you put money in the market, it always goes up. Now, the irony of the whole thing is when you start looking at the research, which I have in this book, by the way, 9 out of 10 investments fail, and new startups fail. And these are just statistics. So, you know, it's still very, very difficult to, you know, make money in the market, but we've been brainwashed on that. And again, the government and the media is driving the getaway car.
Yeah. And it's all being done as a wealth transfer. So once again, we keep reiterating, we're going to drive the same thing home. You need to be self-reliant. You need to be, educate yourself. You need to save, you need to capitalize, you need to start doing all of these traditional American traditional things. You know, if your outgo exceeds your income, your upkeep will be your downfall. You know, and don't buy trinkets and stuff to impress people that hate your guts or don't even know you exist. You know what I mean? And return to sound fiscal principles and be self-reliant, invest in yourself, develop different business income streams, right? So that you can combat hyperinflation. These are the strategies that we're sharing. Check out BarryJamesDyke.com.
Yeah. Get this new book. There's actually a little tab and people really want to know what's going on. And now the reason why I did this book, TD, is because the absolute incredible unbridled speculation, which was going on during COVID-19, it was crazy. I mean, you get the Robin Hood and all these SPACs, the reverse stock splits, which are, you know, which is stock manipulation. All this stuff was just going on, just going like gangbusters. And no one's really talking about it. So I had to put it down because I just couldn't believe it. And so, you know, people said, what's a SPAC? Well, it's a special purpose acquisition company. It's nothing new. They're called blind pools in the 1920s. And then Michael Milken was the last guy who ran those in the 1980s. And 50% of all initial public offerings were SPACs in 21. It's huge. Freaking huge.
Yeah.
No one wants to talk about it. Hopefully, but thank you for having me on your podcast. Hopefully other people, but no, it's huge. But no one really in the mainstream media really wants to talk about any of this stuff.
Yeah, that's why I wanted to have you on. I appreciate you. I don't even know if you have you even calculated how many hours you've spent in research?
Thousands.
Yeah, thousands. So
thousands. Yeah, thousands. I mean, I just it's a personal story. Someday I'll tell you about it. But the it's you know, I had a milestone age this year, whatever. And you know, I'm very grateful. I had really great teachers like Nelson Nash and Bob Castellone and some really good friends, economists and stuff like that. And, you know, don't ask me how to change the oil in my car, but I can tell you how the financial systems work. And so really it's about, you know, doing the right thing for the next generation. And my father was a Marine, a great guy. Unfortunately, died when I was young, but he said, you're always going to leave the world a little bit better than the way you found it. So that's what I'm trying to do. And
you're doing it, Bear.
You know, and so, thank you so much. You know, it's just it's a privilege, and God's put some really good people in my life too to back me up on this. So some of the research now, thank you, God. I've been, literally, I'm talking with some of the top experts and some of the stuff in the world at this point. So we'll see where it goes.
Well, thanks for coming on. Like I said, go over to barryjamesdyke.com. You can get all of his, he is a best-selling author, and you can get any of his books over there. And we will definitely be having Barry back on. I appreciate your time. From my children to you, thank you for your research. I mean, I'm greatly appreciative of this. That's why I want to get this information out. There's other families like mine, larger families that are actually trying to not implode the demographic of America. You know, y'all, the only way we can continue to exist is if we can continue to populate this country, and maybe we'll be able to squeeze out this mass immigration crisis that we're having or whatever. But Barry, thank you so much, brother. Is there anything you want to say in closing just to leave the listeners with?
Well, I tell people my five F's. My most important thing is my faith. The second thing is my family. The third thing is my friends. You know, no one does anything without friends. And then to be physically fit, you know, and then finance. So those are kind of my priorities, are like my hierarchy of needs. And I think really people focus on their faith first. I have to, even in my own life, because of the craziness that was going on. So
yeah, that's right.
In any event, so whatever your religion is, I highly recommend practicing it. And, before we all graduate, you know?
That's awesome, man. We appreciate you, Barry. Thanks for coming on. And remember, y'all, this is a value for value proposition. If you love our information, go on over to thetexasboys.com. Check us out or check out our affiliates down below. Thank you for all the love and support. And remember, stay fearless, my friends.